Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, welcome back to the Silver Fortune podcast. So today we're going to be talking about the Fed. We're going to be talking about some of the markets, and we're going to be talking about silver and the narrative regarding things like inflation, the taper, and whatnot in their relation to into silver. Now, I want to start off, though, with the Fed. You know, in the past few decades, society, especially here in the United States, we've seen a significant shift in, I guess, what they call the Overton window. Essentially a window of acceptable opinions or popular opinions and policies. Now, I think a lot of times people get caught up in a lot of these political shifts that we've seen over time, whether it's on immigration or on same-sex marriage or abortion or whatever controversial, you know, topic you want to, there's been a shift in that, right? The one that a lot of people miss, because it's just something they don't pay attention to as much and maybe lack the knowledge of the history of it, is monetary policy. We've seen it certainly with fiscal policy, even on the Republican side. But monetary policy is the one that a lot of people miss. There's been a significant shift in the past few decades in a dovish direction. Of course, dovish being the easier monetary policy, more likely to be accommodative with lower interest rates, mm-hmm. quantitative easing, etc., versus the hawkish side of monetary policy, which would, you know, generally advocate for the opposite of that. Now, of course, the concern for myself and so many others is that a more dovish monetary policy leads to inflation. I mean, that's the destruction of currency, among other problems. There's problems like financial, you know, repression because of low interest rates and such a massive amount of capital, you know, that has really been transformed and moved around because of quantitative easing. There's a lot of problems, obviously, with a growing wealth gap because of low interest rates in QE and who benefits from that versus who does not. Those are all major concerns to have. And of course, inflation, I think, should be at the forefront of a lot of our minds right now in relation to this. And it's changing every day. Okay. So, because what I want to start off with talking about here is the Fed, obviously, and the last few months that they've had in their leadership. Specifically, two Fed members recently resigning because of revelations that they had been acting and trading in the market in, well, it doesn't matter how or what they were doing. They were, right? It wasn't in some sort of blind trust, which is something I'd much rather prefer Fed members and, hey, members of Congress do when they go into office. Rather than being able to trade the markets and profit off of their position and know what's going to happen ahead of time. That's what they were doing. In fact, in one case, you know, one member had been selling a significant amount of, I think it was equities in the stock market, before, you know, the slowdown or the crash in 2020, because of the pandemic and all that. Okay, so huge problem there, and of course they both resigned. That was, of course, Rosengren and Kaplan. Now that's key to understand exactly who it was that resigned, because they just so happened to be, you know, in today's Overton window, on the hawkish side of Fed policy. Both Rosengren and Kaplan both fall on that hawkish, you know, far more hawkish than, let's say, you know, Neil Kashkari. Now, it's important to understand that, you know, maybe several decades ago, they would be considered doves, right? But today they're considered hawkish, relatively speaking. And of course, they're going to be replaced. If we continue to see this shift towards things like modern monetary policy and easier monetary policy in popular terms and among economists and members of Congress, then I think that will continue to be the trend that these two will be, you know, probably replaced by people that are more dovish on the spectrum. Now, of course, earlier this week, we once again got news that that Jerome Powell has been making moves in the market, selling and buying assets. Now, some people will look at this and say, well, it's just a rebalancing of funds, and maybe there's some truth to it. The fact of the matter is that it's not in some sort of a blind trust, and we can't know that for sure. And the idea that somebody as powerful as the Fed chair that has such a massive impact on the market, not just with his decisions, which are not decisions simply of his own, but of a committee, the FOMC, but his words can move the markets so significantly, is something that people rightfully should be up in arms about. Now, in the case of Rosengren and Kaplan, they're not current members, voting members on the FOMC. So there's not going to be an immediate shift. But in 2022, Rosengren was due to become a voting member, and Kaplan in 2023. It's kind of a rotating basis with some members that are consistently voting every single meeting. Well, their time would be up next year and the following year. And so again, you know, we can, you know, whether we're talking dot plots or just expectations in terms of tapering and QE and interest rates, you can move those in the dovish direction, I think, assuming that they are replaced by what people would consider dovish in today's terms. Now, the question is what's going to happen with Jerome Powell? Jerome Powell was, of course, the Trump appointee, somebody that, you know, is relatively dovish in Fed terms, maybe not as much as Yellen, maybe not as much as Bernanke, but certainly more dovish than a lot of other Fed members and Fed chairs in the past. And you got to ask, you know, who's going to replace him? Assuming it's a sitting member of the Fed, and if it's not, you know, where is that going to fall? Especially with a, you know, Democratic president, which, you know, currently the sitting president, especially if he's a Democrat, tends to be more in the dovish direction currently. Democrats tend to be more accepting of modern monetary theory. Although you put a Republican in office and they're certainly not going to argue against a dovish Fed. You know, Donald Trump is a good example of that. So what happens if Powell's, this whole shift in the Fed policy is like a huge ship. It's like it's like the Titanic. It takes a long time to turn. And as we see this shift, you know, what does that mean for Fed policy, and what does that mean for markets? So I know this sounds like a lot of, you know, it's like 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes of just talking about the Fed and their members, but this is a big deal, right? I mean, people obsess over, you know, a single seat in Congress shifting from Republican to Democrat or vice versa, or, you know, the balance in Congress or the White House or the Supreme Court. And yet people don't talk about the Fed and the balance within the Fed. In terms of monetary policy going forward, in terms of markets, and in terms of inflation, in terms of wealth gap, I mean, I think this is something that we should take into account and, you know, move up the timeline on those things, right? Just like, you know, COVID maybe moved up the timeline, you know, the related economic shutdown, the damage to the currency, QE, lower rates, all that. You know, I think we have to take that into account and say that, you know, the timeline of, you know, a high inflationary event on the U.S. dollar was moved up, and you know, look at where we're at today. I think we have to take that into account, that you know, the future of the U.S. and the balance of power in the world of the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency, you got to move up that timeline on these types of events. You know, some have suggested, like Luke Roman, I think it was on Twitter, that suggests, you know, maybe this is intentional. Maybe Jerome Powell leaked his statements, financial statements, in hopes that he wouldn't get, you know, reappointed or whatever, that he get another term as Fed chair, because he wants off of this sinking ship. I won't blame the guy. This has a big bearing, I think, on the dollar and on the narrative around the dollar and inflation and precious metals. Now, I saw a really, really interesting chart yesterday. And it was a comparison of the price of silver to 5-year real rates, real yield on 5-year bonds, U.S. 5-year bonds. And essentially what it shows is that going back to 2012, there's a pretty decent correlation between silver and the rates, or I should say an inverse correlation, meaning that as rates go lower, silver goes higher. Now, what's really astounding, and this is what I've been talking about here time and time again in the past couple months, is that this so much is about narrative. Well, yes, narrative has a huge bearing on markets and on prices. Currently, there is a huge gap between between silver, which in this case on this chart is on a logarithmic scale, and real rates on the 5-year treasury bond. There's a huge gap that has not been filled since mid 2020, after that big rally in silver, which ultimately has halted, you know, shy of $30 an ounce. Yields have continued to fall in terms of real rates because inflation has continued to rise. Never mind what's happened with the yields. Inflation is crazy out of control. Currently, U.S. real yields on the 5-year are sitting at around negative 1.67%, you know, per this chart. Now, who knows how high inflation actually is? Probably higher than what many have suggested, or even the CPI. But essentially, there's this narrative out there of transitory inflation, and that eventually this 5, 4, 6% inflation is going to moderate. Sorry about the airplane overhead if you hear that. It's going to moderate, and it's going to come back down to 3, 2%. And that's, you know, that's why bond markets can justify such a low rate relative to inflation, which in real terms is pretty deeply negative, right? Again, I saw somebody on Twitter the other day like, but gold doesn't have a yield, you know, jokingly, basically saying like, look at this. Yields are crazy negative right now. Why isn't gold higher? Why isn't, you know, silver higher? I'm thinking, because these bonds are, they got a negative yield. How can that criticism of gold even stand up in that situation? Well, there's a huge gap here, which would suggest silver, the price of silver should be, at least mid 30s right now, according to these rates. And of course, the reason behind that, the number one reason in my mind, is this narrative out there that tapering's going to happen and that inflation is going to come back down. And I'm just not buying it. These supply chain problems, these energy problems, these shortages, inflation, really across the board for the most part, it just hasn't shown any sign of stopping. And the longer, I mean, you cannot just keep it at 5% indefinitely for something like the US dollar. It either has to come down because of a deflationary event, because we know the Fed's not going to with their monetary policy, with interest rates and all that. I don't think they have the ability to do that. They would cause a deflationary event and they would achieve their goal because of a total market or financial collapse. So either you get a market collapse to bring it down, or else it keeps going up. They get way behind the curve and inflation continues to rise. I'll remind you, the Fed is still buying $120 billion a month in securities. Mostly bonds, I believe. They've already, you know, they're already double the bottom of the last tightening cycle, which ended, I think, in 2020, maybe early 2021. Probably 2020. I forget the exact timing on that because of the repo crisis, probably. And they're, you know, by the pretty soon here, within a couple months, they're going to be, you know, double of the peak of the last cycle in terms of their Fed balance sheet. They're going to be sitting around $9+ trillion, already up just below $8.5 trillion. That's not a pretty picture. It doesn't paint a pretty picture for inflation, whether we're talking about assets or real life inflation for you and I. They're behind the curve. They're steeply behind the curve. And I would expect either bonds are going to ultimately catch up with reality and go up in terms of yield, which, hey, by the way, has a huge bearing on the economy and whatnot. This is a huge problem. Or else we're going to see inflation continue to rise. Probably both of those things. Inflation will continue to rise. Real yields will continue to remain low. And eventually silver and gold are going to fill that gap. As always, I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning into today's podcast. And God bless.